It's kind of one of those things, it's like the duck. You know, you see a duck in the water, right? The duck looks like it's cool, but the duck's freaking working hard under the water. Wow, working hard. That's how our place is. We look cool, but we're working hard.
I attended Dr. J-Pop.
I didn't just make it in time for it, but how was that?
Very good. Yeah, I had, keeping it real 100, I had a friend who is one of those friends that you have to try and explain why hashtag All Lives Matter is hurtful.
Yeah.
And it's also somebody that is not from America.
Mm.
So, so dude was a trooper. Dude had some it takes a lot to not be from this country and still have to and learn all about America and how fucked up it is.
Well, because there's so much nuance. Like, before even all this, like, there are so many, like, social colloquialisms that are just, like, the understood zero. You know, like, in a math equation, when you have an integer, like, there's the understood zero after the decimal. Like, there are so many things about American society that we just assume are normal that, like, people who come from outside the United States understand. Like, but, like, it's even regional, too. So, like, on a more positive note, in the South is known more for hospitality, which if you come from like the Northeast or the West Coast, like people holding doors open for you or asking you how your day is going, like is super foreign. Whereas like if you're in the Northeast, you know, you kind of trudge your way to kind of get to where you're going. Like you don't walk at kind of like a leisurely pace. Like if you want to get somewhere, you got to move.
Yeah.
So you're getting run over. Like so these little nuances, I think of just like social habits that I think sometimes take a little while just to learn, just about being involved with a group.
Yeah. And, you know, I've never been to New York. My girlfriend is, I went to school there, and just the difference of like, you don't wave to people in New York when you're walking, right? You don't say hi, you know, which I'm used to.
You might get sucker punched in the jaw if you try and wave at somebody or just kind of give them a nod.
Yeah. And that's my go-to, right? Being from Louisiana, you know, just acknowledging people. So just, and I can't imagine, you know, how hard that is from somebody that wasn't born in America to come in and you have to learn all these colloquialisms and then the roots of this country.
Yeah.
But then again, it's like, okay, so, you know, my friend, you're able to understand that, had a major breakthrough after attending Dr. J-Pop's webinar where you learn about the history, you learn why, you know, in my friend's words, he'll never use All Lives Matter again because he got it. He's like, oh, I get it.
So I think the other frame of reference that from like an American point of view, we have to remember is that there are a lot of countries that have not had the equivalent to a civil rights movement.
Yeah.
So I had the great fortune of studying abroad in Europe through my junior year in undergrad. And like we were in the UK for the most part, and then traveled to France and Belgium and a little bit in Spain and a little bit in Italy. In each of these countries, like interracial relations kind of had a different feel. At the time, the UK was kind of figuring out if they wanted to join the European Union and, you know, what that looked like. There were several of their former, you know, colonies or British territories that were kind of figuring out their relationship. Ireland was like, we want to be fully independent. There are those kind of layers to it. Whereas in France was kind of going through some, you know, highs and lows of like a Black Renaissance, where like we're seeing a lot more Black Frenchmen, in the public light, like speaking out more towards different things going on in France at the time. And I'm not super savvy to like their politics at that time, but like seeing Tony Parker on a billboard talking about something that was a big deal, like as a Spurs fan, like I tuned in. But just different other nuances like that. But at the same time, being reminded from a couple university students that like they haven't seen Jim Crow. They haven't seen, you know, from the Civil War up to, you know, the 1960s when we started to see legislation kind of come into play to try and reverse a lot of this inequality. And so it doesn't register with them. and they probably have their own versions of racial inequality to a certain degree, I would imagine. Because, I mean, where there's any kind of inequality of power, the likelihood of somebody who the people in power or the majority to abuse, you know, the minority is high. Now it comes, but absolute power corrupts, absolutely. Like, that's just the adage of it.
Yeah. So. Absolute power corrupts, absolutely, man. There's so much of it here. Yeah. Yeah. You know, Angela Davis, who's a national treasure and should be protected at all costs.
Yeah.
With a few others. I know she's been on record of saying that, you know, this momentum, the protests, everything that's kind of been going on, feels a little bit different than the past. Mm-hmm. And I know we can't really speak to that because we weren't alive during the civil rights era or movement. I say that like it's still not going on.
Right.
Right. But yeah, it does feel different. I personally haven't been out there on the streets protesting. One, because I live in Austin, and shamefully, I'll say it, man, I'm afraid of getting hit with a beanbag with a rubber bullet and catching the TBI, you know? Did you catch that?
That's real though.
Yeah. Cause it's, you know, and
like, I think you sent me the video of the kid with a rubber bullet.
Yeah. I posted it. Yeah. On my, my feed. Yeah. I mean, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, man. But you know, for me, it's like, yeah, for me, it's like, all right, let me find other ways, you know, contacting legislators, of course, voting, donating. And for me, it's like, all right, I'm gonna try and do every other avenue I can because I ain't really trying to get fucked up by the police right now, which is,
I mean, let's keep it 100. Like, we as Black healthcare providers are also kind of in an interesting spot because we help and serve our first responders, you know, in a direct manner. I have had two fire chiefs on my schedule. I've had several patrol officers. I lived next door to a state trooper while we lived up in Oregon. So like, we interact with these first responders every day in different forms and fashions. So sometimes, you know, there's a bit of a rub when the George Floyd video first came out, one of my patrol officers was in the office. He's rehabbing from a knee injury. And we talked it up, and he's like, dude, I've had 300 death threats since last week, just on my Facebook page. Like, my wife cannot go on social media right now because people are coming after my head, and I wasn't even involved. Like, he's on desk duty right now. And so he's being questioned about, like, what's the police's role in this? How are we educating and, you know, appropriately training for them to actually protect in the manners that need to be happening? Whereas everybody's writing him off, so every cop is absolutely terrible. But like, he even told me that like, there are certain protocols that are expected of an officer in those situations. And even in other situations where, you know, like the Trayvon Martins, the Eric Gardners, like all those other cases where there were faults and different things along the way that were missed. Not to take, you know, any fault away from, you know, the position of where police relationships are, but at least to explain that like, there are ways that we can do better. There are ways that need to change, but there are also faults that were happened in the moment that we also should be aware of as well. It's not to discredit the things that happened or to take away from the fact that there was a misjudgment or a devaluing of human life in those instances, which I think is really the heart of this national discussion. But I think in order to address each of the moving pieces in this wheel, we need to give them each their fair due as openly as we can.
Yeah. It's all about valuing human life, right? And that's what we see with people making the wrong statements, people not taking a stand, and people being silent against police brutality. Some of them holding the highest office in the land, as we've seen time and time again.
You ran into the group of people that just seem like, and I kind of fall into this, so this is kind of my bias, with all this happening, I wasn't surprised by his response. Like, I've mostly tuned out, you know, the president's responses to certain aspects like this, because we've seen too much of his character before this. So the fact that there's this shock and awe from different, wherever you stand on it, on like how his response is, or that I can't believe that he would say such a thing like that. I'm like, I can. Have you paid attention to him at all in the last 4 years?
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to kind of judge or to see the track record of a person's character.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not surprised by anything. He says, I know there's been some great YouTube videos by lawyers, right, that point out everything that was wrong with that march that he did to that church and cleared out the protesters without a warning. So it, you know, we, you know, we're getting, talking about the election campaign coming up. So important that we get out and vote. So, you know, it seems like it only takes a virus and a buildup of murders by authority figures to hopefully get some change. And of course, you know, we're talking about the presidential election, but a lot of this can boil down to local politics and local government as well. Cause we need more representation in government.
The best response I've seen, or like the best kind of quote I've seen about like the local elections, is learn the people that are in these local elections, because that's how your community funding goes. So you may not agree with like everything about this human, because I mean, we're complicated. We see this with chronic pain. We see this with injury. Like, humans,
you know, tied it into the human movement rehab.
We got issues everywhere. However, I think having the awareness and the using your voice to at least say that in my community, I stand for this, whatever that may be, and being aware and just learning, investing the time. We're in an era where we have information at our fingertips. Let's use it for good. If we want to see change happen, change is going to be super uncomfortable. But in order to see it happen, you've got to be willing to put in the work.
Just like a tendinopathy, man.
It's right. You got to put in the work. Got to load that bad boy. For me, and just more of my personality, I tend to want to make impacts in like the direct interactions. So like the biggest thing is all this conversation's happened is like my nieces and nephew, like they're all young. Like my oldest niece is 10. You know, the middle one is 6. The younger boy is 3. I mean, and they grew up, they are, you know, Sarah's white. And I want them to be examples of how we show appreciation and value to others. I want them to be able to play with their peers the exact same way, but to see that their skin is different and do that and to learn about that and not to exclude and see change.
Word, man. Because I know we talked about this too. We can certainly edit this out, but you know, just as healthcare providers, we're in such a unique situation where, you know, hey, one of these days we may end up treating a police officer and a protester, right, in the same day, in the same caseload. What are the patient interactions like right now for you?
So I'm in, for context, I'm in Northwest Fort Worth. You know, a little bit more of the Cowtown side of Fort Worth, not quite Funky Town, you know, like downtown is.
That close to Jerry Jones World?
Not even close. But so it's a little bit more conservative leaning people. I do drive by, I think, at least one, you know, Trump 2020 flag every day to work and back. I've had a few. I have a young patient who wears the bracelet in the clinic. And the hard part is like he's 13. And I don't think he really knows what that bracelet means yet. You know, brings up a conversation to really as well as a human, you know, but he's also 13 and learning who his identity is. I've had a couple awkward interactions. I had one patient who was very, very outspoken about his political standings and how he feels about coronavirus and this whole situation. And you know, it's giving the people room enough to speak on, you know, kind of where they're at and just kind of acknowledging that their frustration is real. But there are also some realities to it too around that, that we have to kind of look bigger picture as well. And just trying to redirect it in the most general way possible. But then I've also had a few patients pull me to the side and ask me like legit how I'm doing with all of this. Like I had a patient ask me about the Aubrey Ahmad, you know, killing and like how that made me react to taking my dogs out for a walk, you know, cause that's something I've, you know, a consideration I have to keep in mind. Or as, you know, the protests have been happening, I've had some candid conversations about, you know, how do we better explain some of the conversation around what these protests really are trying to stand for, what the rioting really says in response to that, and just where this hurt is, and like how do we engage this hurt in a productive manner. And that's why, like I've said earlier, like my best tools, at least in my disposal that I see in myself right now, are to have those one-on-one conversations, to be honest, and to, you know, have people embrace some discomfort, be willing to look at themselves in the mirror and their own biases in this regard or otherwise, and kind of lean into them, like, how do I grow? How do I change? What questions can I ask about myself to leave me a better person or lead me into a direction to where things can actually move forward or move in a new direction? And then giving people the chance to learn, and in that learning process, kind of mess up and fumble through it and not get it quite perfect, but put forth the effort and learn the heart of what's going on. I might be a little bit more on the compassionate kind of, in order to show value of another human, you have to give you have to give that value to that the person across from you too. And it might mean telling them like, yo, you have to up here. This is why, but I want you to see that I say that out of love and out of wanting to see the best from you. Does that make sense?
Totally, man. It's crazy how many parallels that there are with, like you said, we're good at one-on-one conversations because that's our job.
Yeah.
So it makes so much sense when you said, hey, I'm getting out. I'm like, you were creating change every day by interacting with people. You know, even the 13-year-old kid with a MAGA bracelet, right? You are playing an influential role in this kid's life. As a black healthcare professional, who knows if he'll grasp that bigger picture. But of course, the more touch points that he'll see interacting with people of different viewpoints and ethnicities, whatever, hopefully that'll help mold this kid's brain to have a bigger worldview.
For sure.
But man, so many parallels with having these tough and difficult conversations about allyship, about anti-racism, anti-sexism, parallels so well with having a discussion about pain and healing of a body, right? Emotional healing, physical healing. There's so many parallels. It's
wild, right?
It's wild. Yeah.
It's part of being human. I think part of being human is also just having an understanding of self, for good, bad, and otherwise. Like I'm a black, you know, late 20s male that works in a position of authority.
Swole, you know, too. Don't forget swole and handsome.
But strong. I mean, okay. There's some subjectivity to that too. But like the things that I have to intentionally do to portray myself in the manner I want to are very intentional. And that's unfortunate because that's how society has created our culture to be. I was listening to a podcast the other day from it's one I sent you, from one of my favorite hip hop artists, and he had a guy who's part of a church collective and explained like what systemic racism has kind of looked like. So, and it's a way I've explained it to my patients recently. So imagine our ancestors are learning the game of Monopoly. So like you have several different players around the board. You know, you get so much money when you go past go. When you're in jail, you have so much time that you're in jail for so many turns. You can buy and own property, you know, all the rules of Monopoly. However, there's one specific person on the board is like, except for this person, the rules are slightly different. They don't get any money when they pass go. They can't own any property, and they're in jail, you know, X amount of times longer than the rest of the game. But we're going to go ahead and play, and we'll just see how the game goes. And so the generation learns the game by these rules, and they play by it for so long. Kids start to learn the game, and then they play for rounds, pipes up and asks, you know, why does this one person and their child have a different set of rules than the rest of us? So the older generation kind of looks down at the game, and it's like, you know, it's a good point that things are a little different, and I'm glad you brought it up. So why don't we just we'll adjust the rules a little bit? Let's give them a little bit of money when they pass go, since they, you know, play the way they play the same way we do, and we'll shorten their jail time. But at the same time, they can only own some properties. They can only own a few different things, but at least they're participating more. And so, you know, it seems to appease for the time, but the game itself hasn't changed. The rules have been slightly adjusted, but the framework of the game hasn't changed. So the next generation plays that way. They kind of reflect and have the same questions. They try and adjust and change the wording or change the feeling of certain parts of the game, but the game itself has not changed. There's still this notion that there are people that are excluded and viewed and valued as less than. And that's the problem. The other people that play the game have never been shown to it because they weren't in that position to see it. That's what makes it so hard for people to kind of wrestle with. Well, it's like, I'm a nice person. I grew up not seeing color. I grew up, you know, taking care of the people around me and this, that, and the third. I'm like, these are all good things. But when some of the messaging of some of your word choice devalues the other people that are actually having the struggles that have been going on for generations, it shows that you're missing the point. It may not be your intent, but it shows that you've been part of the game all along. That's the problem. It's not you. It's the game itself. It is the framework where this all happens. So that's why we need to change it. So you being aware that the framework even exists is part one. Part two is you can't be just nice for the sake of being nice. You have to be intentional with the way you carry yourself and the people around you and hold them to that same standard.
Definitely. I think that that's been many people's awakenings right now of hey, you can be nice and still be a bigot. Those,
for sure.
Those things aren't exclusive.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. And then, you know, just when you thought it couldn't get any crazier, here comes Greg Glassman. Here comes Greg Glassman. Who knows what that was for? I know Greg Glassman has a history of being making questionable comments and of being a jerk. For those of you who don't know, Greg Glassman, former founder, CEO of...
Former founder, one of the co-founders of CrossFit Inc. He's was the CEO.
Yeah. And I'm sure if you haven't heard by now, you know, go look it up. Go read the emails and the dumb tweet. Damn near every gym in Austin has disaffiliated. Rightfully so.
Most of my friends that are gym owners have deaffiliated. I've at least read a little bit of context into the tweet. He'd been kind of going off and going back and forth with a few groups talking about how COVID precautions with use of masks and how useless they are in his opinion and things of that nature. And then like how this whole pandemic was kind of creating fragile people and actually perpetuating more chronic health issues.
Oh God.
Which was, you know, his viewpoint is like, I'm trying to fix the chronic health epidemic, which is his famous tweet. And here we are. So I didn't understand the emails. I read the email accounts and, you know, tried to figure out that context, but as crazy as he is, I'm not even going to put my energy towards that.
Yeah. It's so good to see all the gyms taking a stand. So good to see the CrossFit athletes taking a stand and opting out of the games. As we know, the sport has been predominantly white since its conception.
The athletes of color that have made it big and made the big names for themselves. I mean, you have Easy Muhammad, who's made a huge name for himself. Chandler Smith has been a huge up and comer. He's a good dude. James Townsend was one of the early athletes. He's a juggernaut athlete guy. Also just seeing like the sport grow throughout movers and shakers the last couple of years. It's grown some, but yeah, the picture is typically your 5'9", 195 dude and like your 5'4", you know, 155 girl, you know, that look like they're straight out of California, out of a muscle magazine.
Yes. And hopefully, you know, this will lead to more opportunities with brands and with just the evolution of the sport.
I want to ask you, like, since there's this hyper awareness right now, just because of, you know, how close to these events that we are, like, there seems to be a hyper awareness of, like, how we phrase or how we say certain things. And I feel like the backfire effect that we're seeing kind of responding with some people is like, I can't even say the way that I feel or say the things that I want to say, because if I do, I'm going to offend somebody. So how do we tiptoe around cancel culture and like this hypersensitivity to certain responses? How are you seeing that?
And so first I am totally cool with quote unquote PC culture. I don't have a problem with that, because I think that's, you know, again, to reference placebo and nocebo, we know the power words have. We know there's words that harm, and we know there's words that heal. I think we can only grow as a culture if we become more sensitive to words that harm, whether they're, hey, you got bone on bone and you're the spine of a 12-year-old, or this is a common slur, or don't see that physical therapist because he looks like a thug, or hey, you're well spoken for for who you are. You know, we can get into all these microaggressions, which has become a popular term. I'm all for improving our sensitivity to words that harm. All for it, and this is coming from somebody that got called out in his women's and gender studies class at LSU for using douchebag in a course. So I've been going through the ranks on that's not a phrase.
I know what you mean though.
I've been lectured by a you know, PhD holding PhD women's and gender studies candidate on the importance of words and how douchebag, is offensive and shouldn't be used. As far as cancel culture goes, I know it's super trendy. I know it's super easy to hashtag cancel somebody, hashtag cancel Drew Brees.
stay off of that one, bro.
It's my quarterback.
My quarterback.
But yeah, I'm not that mad at cancel culture, to be honest, man. I'm not that mad at it. I know it has its faults. I know it's where we get quick to judge, and that can stop people from growing, and it's really easy to stop those conversations as soon as you cancel somebody, or as soon as you're like, oh, I'm not talking to them again because they don't believe what I believe in. That we need to do better about having conversations, and we need to stop being quick to cancel somebody, you know, unless they're a Nazi. But you know, even then,
right? There's some absolutes for sure, you know, for sure.
Yeah. But yeah, man, to bring it back, I'm all for being more sensitive to words that harm, and because I think that's how we grow. Even though it's tough, and even though I do like using the term douchebag, and because it's a fun word, but it also has those negative connotations that
Yeah, I think sensitivity also like has an awareness of context, obviously.
Yeah.
I think as a culture, we do a really crappy job of disagreeing with people. Like,
hey, I don't believe that. Hey, I don't agree with that.
I think in learning, I'm a very, very rudimentary understanding of argumentation culture, but like argumentation theory and philosophy of like discourse, we suck at embracing the error in our own ways, but we're so ready to go hammer in on somebody else's errors. And I think instead of yelling back at people to say like, you know, this is wrong, this is why you're wrong, you know, I'm gonna yell at it louder, I'm like, why don't you, instead of berating me about this fault that you see, how about you teach me an alternative, or teach me your, you know, where your perspective is coming from?
Yeah.
Because then it becomes a conversation and not a diatribe, you know?
That's true. Yeah, that's a big fault of cancel culture for sure. And yeah, to again reference Drew Brees, if Drew Brees is totally coming from an oblivious white man point of view, and it took damn near his whole team and the whole NFL to say, hey, bro, this is why what you said's hurtful. How come you can't see that?
Like, the thing that amazed me with Drew was the fact that, like, you were in the locker room with these guys when this whole kneeling and the protest, even the conversation four years ago now, like, yeah, you were in the room as this happened. How did you still miss this? Like, there are guys that trust you to work towards a common goal, which has been the major response from most of these sports teams. Like, you're in a locker room with a bunch of people, you know, because this
is
women's sports too. Going to war for a common goal, coming from various backgrounds and various socioeconomic, you know, situations and, you know, different stances in life. And, like, y'all may not agree on, you know, the uniform choice for the day or God knows what else, but at least you're going to step out onto the playing surface and do a job together. Like, and there's some camaraderie in that, and there's probably some open-hearted, you know, vulnerability and understanding yourself that probably has to come from that. So you've been on teams where, like, the team's dysfunctional. You're not going to achieve the goal, period, the end. So that was the thing that stood out to me. I'm like, come on, Drew. Like, I know you talk to your own linemen, and I know they're probably going to sucker punch you in the face if you walked in saying that nonsense. Like, what's up?
Yeah, and that you know, that harkens back to the one-on-one conversations and how you approach yourself with somebody with opposing views. And yeah, it's these are tough. They're tough conversations to have, man. They're so nuanced, so based in colloquialism, so based in implicit bias and systemic oppression. It's tough.
Yeah,
but it's necessary.
We don't get a protocol. They're super necessary, and we don't get a protocol on how to handle every single one the exact same way. Like,
that'd be awesome if there was, right? 8 weeks out, this is what you say to tackle racism.
Like, think about it though. If we had a protocol, like, we'd be just like every, like, sci-fi dystopian movie ever. Where, like, the whole premise of the movie is, like, the fact that, you know, heterogeneity of the entire culture is what the problem is. And so as soon as you have an outlier that says, like, hey, everything is effed up, we need to change, that's when, you know, the climax of the movie and all the reaching behind the curtain of why everybody's the same and all, that's why we have the movies. Like, society stuff is different, because if not, we're just all robots, you know. Yeah,
we're just all the same color. I don't see color.
You should. You need to.
That's like saying I don't see movement patterns.
That's like saying I don't see your pain.
Yeah. Hey, all pain's the same.
It's not, though. Like, you can't compare hurts. Like, your life experience growing up as a black man in Louisiana might be very different from my life experience being a black man growing up in Texas. Like, how have you navigated that? How have you embraced your identity in all the facets of it?
Yeah,
like
eating a lot more gumbo, probably.
Yeah, I wish I ate more gumbo. So that's my first mistake. Let's start there. But, like, let's keep it real. Like, when was the first time you were exposed to the N-word? Let's start there.
Jesus. Because then the question is, like, all right, from the black community or from the white community?
Let's start from the white community. Let's start from the non people of color.
It was probably, I think it was high school. Mm. So I think I was able to get away with it. One, because you live in New Orleans and you go to majority black schools for the most part. For you, it was earlier?
Oh, way earlier.
Yeah.
My parents worked really, really hard to put us in, like, nicer suburban schools growing up. So my first involvement with the black community was through the church. And, you know, I didn't really embrace it as much just because I wasn't exposed to it as often, which is a whole different aside. But, like, the first time I interacted with the N-word, I was three or four. I was in pre-K and a kid came up to me on the playground and said, "Hey, I have a nickname for you." And I thought I was making a friend, and he called me the N-word, and like, I had no idea what it meant. So I go through the day kind of figuring it out, or just kind of, you know, mulling it over. I come home and I tell my parents, you know, that I made a friend today and he gave me a nickname, and I told him what it is, and my mom just bursts into tears. And it still hurts hearing that story, like, which we talked about this recently. But yeah, that happened. And there have been several major macro and microaggressions, you know, in between that along the way.
Yeah.
So all that to really say that when you're interacting with somebody's story, that's their story. Like, you share your story with the people that deserve to hear it. But when you see stuff that's just absolutely wrong, you speak to it only from the place that you can. If you don't fully understand what you want to, ask. Don't assume.
Yeah.
So.
And that's, you know, you hear the statements from parents, from family that say, "Hey, you as a black man, you as a black woman, you have to be the best. You have to be 10 times better than your counterparts."
Mm-hmm. Work as hard for half the result.
And, you know, it's true. But, you know, as we get into mental health and words that hurt, words that heal, words that harm, is that a statement that should be continued to should we continue to say that to our younger black boys and girls?
That's good. I do, until our society genuinely takes step forward, and I don't know what that looks like. I think we do need to create the awareness with our children of all colors that not everybody sees everybody the same. And I think you can spin it in a couple different ways, but I think we should take pride in what makes us unique as our culture groups, as our races, as our ethnicities. We should celebrate those within our communities, and also to, you know, to the people around us that maybe not are a part of it. But also continue to seek out information about the things around us too, and why they are the way that they are. Because on the flip side, if we don't, we use a lot of these stereotypes and we use the framework of the broken system as a cop-out to not take advantage of what opportunities do come our way. We may have a slightly different starting place, you know, when you kind of compare all things equal, there might be viewed as slightly different, but you still have to take the chance for the opportunities that are out there as well too.
Yeah. Yeah, man.
Yeah. How do you think you would, if you had a high school student that's looking at you and your and Reach Outcomes is starting to kind of grow and get some traction, like they love seeing your passion with this industry, how do you encourage them in this current national conversation, you know, as a person of color to move forward? What are your words to that person?
Yeah, I struggle with that, man. Just like you were saying, man, I think that there's part of me that's like, hey, man, like, yeah, hold that chip on your shoulder, keep that edge, because it'll help to. I want to say, hey, it's going to help to make you more mentally tough and resilient. But I know everybody's different. Everybody has different capacities and tolerance and to this, and of course, you know, we're validating people's experiences and their pain and journey. But yeah, I would say, hey, and embrace that edge. Don't ever feel like you have imposter syndrome, or feel like you don't deserve anything. So I would try to weave that line of not giving them the nocebo that people always look at you different because fuck that. Because that's just, you know, I would just say, hey man, just I would try to keep it as much success or outcomes based as possible.
Sure.
In an effort to mentor them, while subtly addressing that you got to dominate, regardless of who thinks that you're not worthy.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, like affirm that chip on their shoulder because it's there.
Yeah, you cannot address it.
Can't not address it. Like having that hunger, having that ambition, having that desire is a beautiful thing. When you put that energy to work beautifully. I think this was like my youth group mentor mentioned that in every situation when you're into the public eye, give them no reason to see you for anything short of who you are.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that means all of it. That means your skin color. That means your dialect, wherever you come from. But that means your merit, your effort, your whatever you give to this planet or whatever space you're in, they should see.
Make them see all of that.
Yeah. And that's tough. That's tough when you're having a hard time really like learning about what all that is too.
It's interesting, man. It's so much to think back on. You know, especially as we see a new generation coming up and moving forward. Each generation seems to be more progressive than the next. And it seems like we're trending in the right direction because history seems to do that, even though it's three steps forward, two steps back, and it's a slow fight. But big picture, we seem to be getting there. So that's reassuring. Lots of work to do. To make this
work's
better.
Work's got
to
be done.
Work's got to be done. They call it progressive loading, right? Graded exposure, progressive loading. We're gonna get there to that one rep max of
it's Sisyphus pushing the rock up the hill.
Yeah, that shout out to Derek Miles in that last episode. We're gonna keep pushing that rock up the hill, man. But yeah, I don't know where I was going with this, man.
Speak your truth, dude. Speak your truth. I don't think, like we said earlier, there's not a perfect and right answer. It's going to look differently for other people. There are phenomenal voices doing, like teaching a lot of work in a bunch of different places. So go reach out to some places that are, you know, something you can embrace. You know, I've seen Rachel Cargiles talking about the big unlearn project.
Yeah.
It's learning the social conversations of systematic oppression. I've seen several athletes kind of open up some spaces and kind of talking about having uncomfortable conversations. So, I mean, pick your spaces of where you want to learn or people that have influenced you before and reach out. Use the social media for good and not just to kind of passively approach. Like, this is an active change. This requires work. This requires struggle. That's the biggest thing.
And it'll only make us more resilient. You know?
Without a doubt. If we choose to.
Yeah. Yeah, man. I'm hopeful.
You know, hope is a choice. Joy is a choice, man. You know, a lot of these tropes and like these adages have a lot of truth, even in these times of, you know, where the struggle is hard. Like we have the blessing of seeing how history has kind of unfolded things. And I think that's sometimes the disconnect when we see people like they quote the Malcolm X's and the Martin Luther King's and the Rosa Parks and the forefathers that kind of set a lot of these conversations in motions, like, oh yeah, they did this. But like, y'all, there's a big realization, like when they were saying these things, it was just as uncomfortable, if not more so. Like, there are more people who are outright against having this conversation. So we have 50 years, you know, 50, 60 years worth of at least some sort of, you know, application of this. Let's do something with it.
You gonna run for office, man?
Nah, bro. No? my Twitter strength is not very good. I might be good in the weight room, but me on Twitter is a weak. Yeah.
No Twitter fingers?
Nah, dog. Not for me. No, but I think I will, and being perfectly, you know, candid with you, this time of reflection through all of this has kind of created some great conversations for me and Sarah and like how we want to raise our kids. And I think it's really kind of instilled this message that I want to definitely be in a place to teach and impact and just give value to people wherever they sit, whatever they look like. You know, their life matters just as much as mine does.
And you do that every day. Every dang day you do that, man. And your influence is only going to spread and grow.
I'm trying, man.
So the human movement.
We don't do it for the clout. We do it because the work's got to get done.
That's right. Pushing that rock.
Keep pushing the rock.
Man. Heck yeah, man.
So, Jared, my challenge to you, man, how are you going to create joy through all this? How do we create joy in this conversation?
I don't know. I just keep pointing to the future and just saying, it's going to get better, because it's not regression to the mean, but progression. I'm going to keep using humor and using satire to engage in conversations and push the needle forward slowly in my circle and my sphere of influence, which is small, but
it's growing. It's growing, bro. I'm seeing the duck legs has been treading some water and making some ripples. So it's growing, my guy.
We're trying to tread that water, man. But yeah, I think because we don't have a choice. We don't have a choice. My weapon in this has been humor. That's what I'm good at. I think that's what I'm decent at. A lot of people will debate that, but I think you just have to keep pointing out the satire in all of it. I'm such a huge fan. I grew up on Daily Show. On Jon Stewart, Trevor Noah, Colbert, Weekend Report, and it's because, man, if you haven't seen 8:46 by Dave Chappelle by now,
do it
because comedy teaches you one thing. Right, this is Chris Rock. You in comedy, you never punch down. You always punch up. And you know what he means by that. We cut out a little bit, right?
But you never punch down. I love that line.
Yeah, because it's not funny. Why would you make fun of the oppressed? Why would you make fun of people that have it harder than you?
Right. There's no power in that.
No power in that. You speak truth to power. You always punch up. It's how you fight the power. Insert your Rage Against the Machine lyrics here. Good comedy doesn't lie, right? Good comedy is all about truth. And, that's why 8:46 is so raw and so truthful. And, you know, somehow it's technically stand-up comedy, but just like a good sermon from your pastor or comedian, there's so much truth in there and it hits you, right in the soul, which the 24-hour news media can't and never can never do because they are paid.
It's not supposed to.
Yeah. It's not designed. So hopefully, you know, tools like comedy will help steer that young MAGA wearing bracelet kid, give him a different perspective and break that 24-hour news cycle, which has been exposed consistently of photoshopping images and using words that harm and using their agenda. The only agenda of comedy is to make you laugh and challenge you. So that's why I'm fond of it. That's why we're here doing what we do. You dropping your sermon and me being a goofball. So that's our plan.
I mean, I might have to chill on some of these sermons, but I think that's the challenge for me, is kind of understand my voice in this situation. And not stepping down. I think there was an episode, I think either you've done with someone, or I know Zach has talked to another clinician about living up to your license. So like working up to the top of your license, like not shying down from the space that you have, embrace that and make the most of it. So,
man,
that's what
that's powerful.
Yeah. So that's where the work needs to get done.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Josh, man, for hanging out with us. I think that's a great way to end.
Hey, I appreciate you reaching out and giving a space to reflect. I hope that it sheds some light to some people and, you know, foster some tough conversations, and we keep this thing moving.
Yeah. What's your challenge to the listener?
Take out a list of questions, things that you don't quite understand about what's going on. It could be from something you've seen online, something on TV, something you just don't get, and write it out. And try and find somebody that looks like you to answer that question. Find somebody that doesn't to answer that question. And when you kind of reach that place to purposefully put yourself in a conversation or an interaction that's uncomfortable, and kind of lean into that and see what you can glean from that. I think growth comes from discomfort. And if you really want to make change and you really want to see progress, you got to get uncomfortable first.
Gotta load them tendons, man.
Load it up,
man. Load it. That's the answer. The answer is always load. What else you want? Come
what
on,
else
now.
What else you want?
Josh, y'all have a good night. Take care of that puppy. Make sure he doesn't, you know, ruin too many things out there.
We'll do the best we can. You take care of your girl, bro. We'll talk soon.
Peace.